Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back with you for another episode of the podcast. This one, not talking about rugby in general. We did that on the last one, so find that in your feed. Right now, we are looking at the Premiership Final of 2006, an old school game, and we're going to dig in, see what we can learn from it, see what our takeaways from it are, see what we thought about it 14 years on. Sale Sharks v Leicester Tigers. It is on YouTube, so you can go and watch the video, hit pause now, and then come back if you wish. But JB, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Tim.
You must have loved this.
Oh, as I think many neutrals did, actually. It's one of those games with a lot to like.
And hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim. As a neutral, I can say I did enjoy this game. Quite enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, and I suppose for it reminded me of Sale that I remember when I first moved to Manchester and I started being my brother started playing there in 2008 or something like that. So it was in the similar era.
Yeah. So interesting, because normally we're all neutrals about Sale, but I think it's fair to say you weren't a neutral for Sale at this time, were you?
No, after this point I was. I moved to Manchester in 2007.
Ah.
So I wasn't particularly interested at this point, but when I moved, Sale Sharks were the champions of England.
Ah.
When I moved here.
You were the only one really connected to the team. You're the only real...
A couple of years afterwards.
Just saying.
I was playing at Manchester Rugby Club at this time.
That's a shame. Yeah, really, really interesting, because I really like this team. And I did not in any way have any affiliation to Sale at all. In fact, I'd taken a few years off rugby, so I really enjoyed watching Leicester Tigers back in the day. I took a little bit of time off. And when I sort of dipped back into it, Leicester built this phenomenal team. Sorry, Leicester. Sale. And I just liked it because it was kind of put together, I think, a little bit like like you build your team in Championship Manager. There were just names and talent everywhere.
And it was probably unsurprisingly because of who the coach was. It was built like a Toulon team almost. Yeah. It was a Galacticos type setup. But looking back, there was some good young English talent in there as well. So you had some of the international talent and then some of the English boys who came through and have been superb servants for just both on Sale the YouTube, and elsewhere.
On the YouTube channel, on the YouTube video, which people might watch, did you not find it strange that there was 40 minutes of like Manchester TV channel interviewing Philippe Saint-André in the little bowels of Edgeley Park and the semi-final before we actually got to the final?
Was there? Because I just skipped through it. Rugby.
So I did think that was a bit weird. I watched a little bit of that and then skipped to the game. And then I watched 5 minutes of the semi-final, thinking it was the final. So I was like, hang on a minute. Why is this being played at Edgeley Park?
Who did they beat in the semi?
Wasps.
Did they have that?
Yeah, it was good. But you're right in what you say. So the Sale team, it was a brilliant era for Sale. And I'm sure most Sale fans can just rattle off the team. But like Ben Foden, like you say, before he was an international player, when he was just a youngster breaking through. Wigglesworth as a youngster. But then you had Jason
Hodgson
Robbins.
Hodgson was 25.
Exactly.
Well. Who?
Then you had...
Hodgson.
Yeah. Charlie Hodgson was just breaking through into the England squad at the time. But then you had Jason Robinson, one of the greatest players in the Premiership ever. And then you had this cast of international stars. And Sebastian Chabal is one of my favourite rugby players ever. Not because he was one of the best rugby players ever, because he was, in so many ways, he was useless. But in so many ways, he was incredible.
And this is exactly what I love about the players that I love. I love them to be deeply flawed. Like, to be Andy Powell, Carlos Spencer, Pierre Spiess, and Chabal fits this model wonderfully. He could have the best game on the planet that the planet's ever seen, frankly, or he could be awful, and you don't know which one's going to show up. And his head would go down. That's the amazing thing. Like, such a specimen, such an incredible talent and athlete, and his head would just go down, and he'd be ineffective.
I was trying to think when I was watching it. Who is like Chabal now? I can't really think of. There's not many Chabals because we've kind of depowered. Not that I'm not complaining about this because I understand the welfare thing, but because the sort of the hit and that confrontational thing has become less emphasised, I don't know that there is a sort of Chabal type figure in world rugby.
I think Pickermoles is the closest thing.
Maybe, but yeah,
effective running.
Even Pickermoles is like a diluted, like it certainly doesn't have that attitude that Chabal had, and that those swings that Chabal had.
Yeah,
when was the last time Premiership Rugby 23 had four French players in it?
Leicester Tigers had two.
Gloucester had a couple, yeah. Azam and Mercier, but I can't think of any more.
You can. I reckon you'd go Azam, Mercier, Merceron, and what's his name? Come back to me, Yannick. No, Yannick Brew. Yeah, Yannick. Yeah, I think did Yannick Brew go there? No, not him. Scrum half.
Yashvili.
Yashvili was there. So Yashvili was there with Merceron, and I think that Azam would have been there as well. And they also had Christian. Arno for a little while as well.
They did.
Saint-André was there for a bit.
Yeah.
But different times. The Wasps have had a few French players over the years as well. Ibanez and Betson. Probably a few more. Those two must have played together, I would have thought.
You're right. Four is rare.
I know. I think I've got one. It would be... I've forgotten his name. This is so annoying. What was the French captain called?
Which one?
The big second row.
Fabien Pelouse.
Oh, the one that played for Saracens.
Oh, Benazi.
Yeah, Abdelbat Benazi, Caleb Benazi. You would have had Castagnard in there. And I'm sure there'd be another one. Again, Califano played for Saracens and for Gloucester, so he could have gone both ways, and there'd be another one I'm thinking of as well who will come to me later.
There you go. So answer is we don't know.
Ibanez went from Saracens to Wasps.
Well, the other way you can link those three teams and those three eras is the only time you have multiple French players in a team is when a club is really spending big.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very... And I think the one thing the Premiership lacks is French players. I would love to see it mandatory to have one French player per team.
Well, if you could draft a French player let's say for argument's sake, let's just pick a club at random. If you could just draft a player to Sale Sharks, JB, who would you pick?
So many to choose from. I mean, even their third choice scrum half is just amazing.
If you had to just pick one.
Come back to me. I'm spoiled.
Uge.
Oh, yeah, I would actually. I was going to But yeah, Uge's fine. So many.
Uge, you could legitimately create a team of like the most hated players in the world and get Uge in there, get Mike Brown in there, get Falau in there.
Not the most hated, but the most annoying. Ashton on one wing, Uge, Marshall. Yeah. Yeah, and Falau.
Definitely Falau.
But this was Leicester. This was a changing of the guard, wasn't it? This was a sort of watermark moment for Leicester, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite a sad Leicester performance, I felt.
Yeah.
It was, I think sad is the right way to describe it. Just the way that they kind of fizzled out with, I mean, barely firing a shot.
Yeah. And I mean, some of the performances from Leicester were so poor. Tom Vaughan Dell did not look like a professional rugby player.
He looked fast enough to be a professional rugby player.
Yeah, and this is the tyranny of being talented. I've said it before about Pierre Spies. You know, when you're that talented, do you really need to work on being good at rugby? Probably not. And it showed, throwing balls into touch, running into touch himself. What really kind of had that change in the guard feel for me, and tell me if you agree with this, watch the Stade versus Leicester game and look at the fizz that Austin Healey brings. And he didn't even start. And when he did start, he's just not the same player that he was.
Yeah, he was about 33 or 34 in this game.
Of him in his career. But you know, when that dynamo goes, that and he brought so much to it, I didn't really find a way to replace him. I thought Andy Good played well, mind.
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean the comparison, so Hodgson and Good, 25-26 at that time, both prime of their lives or young up and coming, both looking for England shirts. I thought Hodgson was brilliant in this game.
Oh, Hodgson was definitely better.
I thought Good, he kick sticks well. I mean, the guys outside him, the backs outside him, he didn't bring into the game at all. I mean, the talented backs who you just didn't see. The most notable thing in the backs, that all those talented backs, Daryl Gibson, Ollie Smith, Vaughan Dell, Tuilagi, Jordan Murphy, the most notable thing that they did in 80 minutes was Vaughan Dell's pass into touch. They did nothing.
I also think that there was a little period of time there where they didn't really know how to play the game. So Pat Howard offered a second playmaker. Rod Kafer. It wasn't Rod Kafer that came after Pat Howard. It was somebody else. I can't remember. So they always spent big on that inside centre position, and they end up with Daryl Gibson, who I think, did he come from Bristol? Was that his move?
Yes, he was Bristol before that.
Yeah, so he...
Crusaders and New Zealand, and then UK, right. Bristol, Leicester, and then Glasgow, looking at his profile.
And I think that they put a load of emphasis on him doing good stuff, and he never really came good for Tigers. Same for Julian White, was at Bristol. Abel's a phenomenal scrummager, this, that, and the other, and he was. He gets dismantled here.
Yeah, that Leicester scrum got destroyed and absolutely taken apart.
But that often seems to be the entire story of Julian White's career. Comes in with a ferocious reputation and then doesn't do that much during the game.
Yeah. Hodgson, I mentioned him before. Hodgson was magnificent.
He was.
He was superb.
And the context of this game is England. Charlie Hodgson, I think, had been given the fly half spot in the Six Nations just prior and was not good at all. And I think his confidence was massively dented.
I wonder if you... Are you referring to the France game?
Well, I just read up a little bit around Sale's season and then clicked through a few links and looked at Charlie Hodgson. I don't know the specifics about the games, but the 2006 Six Nations, Charlie Hodgson didn't cover himself in glory and came in for a lot of criticism, apparently.
So, Charlie Hodgson's first ever game for England, I think, must have been... I'm going to go out on a limb and say 2002.
2001.
And it was against France, and he played 12.
Okay.
and England, yeah, it was because they hadn't won the World Cup, and they were on this campaign, just looking awesome. Everything Clive Woodward did turned to gold, and he thought, I'm going to put a second playmaker in at 12 and put Charlie Hodgson in at 12, and it was not good. Yeah, it wasn't until after that World Cup that he started playing for England again. And I think that's when he might have had his game. No, that'd be before the World Cup. He played against Romania, I want to say. and in classic Charlie Hodgson style, kicked everything available to him except for the last kick, which would have made him the England's record point scorer for one game.
Well, I think you meant you referenced the World Cup there, and I think that would be the thing which I would mention, which was this was kind of the last throes of the World Cup legacy of Leicester Tigers, who had seven players in the 23 for that, or 22 or whatever it was at the time, the 2003 World Cup final.
Yeah, because there's
no Johnson here. Well, all that was left was Martin Corey, Lewis Moody,
yeah,
Ben Kay. Graham Rowntree wasn't in the World Cup squad. No.
He might have been in the squad. He wasn't in the 22 for the final, I don't think.
But you really had those three left. Julian White, was he a World Cup?
No,
he wasn't. So he had those three players left. And I think that was kind of symbolic of the kind of, they were all coming towards the end. They weren't the forces that they were. And yeah.
Also, the style of game that they were playing, they were very uncertain. In fact, in some ways, I think the way that Sale went about winning this was been more Leicesterish than Leicester. They were very, 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 very abrasive with their running, and they just beat them up. I mean, that's what really happened. They beat them up, and they kicked their penalties when they came into being.
Yeah, and early on, so the weather was horrendous. Watching the game early on, Hodgson kicked to the corner off good attacking front foot ball, even though Leicester had the much taller back three, like considerably taller back three, because he was pinning balls onto Varndell and Tuolagi. And the first try, I think it was the first try, was Murphy failed to take one of those cross kicks.
Well, the first two tries were kind of similar, weren't they? One was Moody, one was Lund. Have I got that wrong?
No, Quato was the first try.
Quato, then Lund.
It was a cross kick from Hodgson to Murphy. Should have taken it, but didn't. And Quato then scoops it up and drops over.
Here's something which I think you'll appreciate. So, in the modern game, it's quite hard to pick a back row, because what you've got to do is you just got to pick the three best players. And usually the three best players can do basically all the roles. Look at Tom Curry playing eight. You know, seven, now plays eight. Yeah, fine. Okay. So actually, in a way, picking a back row today is quite hard. This Sale back row is about as old school and as special as
Yeah. The classic, if you would have a dictionary definition of a classic number six, it is Jason White.
Yeah.
Abrasive, big engine, tackles everything in sight.
Highlights for a thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then Magnus Lund, the classic link player, quick jackaling seven, and then your ball carrying eight in Sebastian Chabal.
Yeah. So, like, watching Magnus Lund is literally how 50-year-old ex-professionals would describe how a number seven should play. As a compliment, would you believe it? He is everywhere. And he does those weird things like, so as soon as a player turns around with the ball, he is there and he's latching on. He's diving on the floor everywhere. He was absolutely brilliant.
He was superb.
He was awesome. And is he a talent that... What happened with Magnus Lund?
Well, the money ran out of hell and he went over to...
Biarritz.
So a really nice story was Dean Schofield was lining up for Toulon, and they're in the tunnel. Dean Schofield turns around to Magnus Lund and said, "Hey, would you imagine that we'd both be captaining in the top 14 when we're playing for Sale? Because they both made it to captain Toulon and Biarritz respectively."
Huh. But he was that good that he was. And this was at a time when England had some pretty special seven options. Lewis Moody was against him being one.
Wasn't Lewis Moody that made him move? Can you remember the name?
Tom Rees.
So if you remember, when Wasps played Sale the season after, and Delali gave his post-match interview, and Delali says, "Well, people say that there's two sevens in England. I think it's quite clear that there's only one seven in England.
Tom Rees."
Reese.
Rhys is someone who should have had more game time for England. Injury driven.
Yeah, tragic. But yeah, I'm sorry. I'm really taking you on a tour around memory lane.
It's cool. You mentioned that it was. You talked about Frenchmen.
Mm.
How many Spaniards have played in Premiership rugby?
Well, what about Spanish speaking people? Because they had.
Fernandez Lobby.
And maybe you could argue that the best player to ever play for Sale wasn't even on the field that day, which was Fernandez Lobby's brother, who arrived the season afterwards.
Juan Martin.
Mm. Yeah, who I actually do think is the best player ever to pull on the Sale jersey.
Which is he the one with the socks around his ankles?
That's what he wants, mate. Sometimes he doesn't wear socks.
Yeah, that's him, isn't it? He's the back row.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah,
he's genuinely amazing. Yeah. And he was amazing at Sale. He was amazing at Toulon for years. He was amazing on the international scene for years. Now I think about it, unless you two can correct me, I think he's the best ever player to play for Sale.
He's magnificent. He's an absolute Rolls Royce. And when you mentioned before of the players these days who, back row players who can do all of the jobs, he's a back row player who could do all of the jobs and could probably do a pretty handy job in the centres as well.
Yeah. I think the best player to play for Sale was on the field and was captain.
Dean Scuffer wasn't the captain.
Jason Robinson.
No, because you could lose. I think Jason Robinson would score tries for anyone, but I don't think he'd have as much of an impact on the overall game as a back rower. And that's the
Jason Robinson is, yeah.
He was ridiculous when he started in the Premiership in the early 2000s. He was outrageous.
He was outrageous.
He's just so much faster than everyone else. And he's changed of direction.
He had his debut against London Irish in a midweek game. In fact, it might have been a midweek A-League game because it was covered on the Rugby Club. And the only post-match interviewers with the Irish coaching team, who said one thing, which is, we told them not to kick to Jason Robinson.
and this is what I found, this is what's amazing about him, is by 2006, as this was, but I mean, you would have, after a couple of weeks of watching Jason Robinson play, you would have had a team meeting and gone, right, we need to send three people at him if he gets the ball, but let's try not to give him the ball. Despite the fact everyone knew what he could do and would try and mitigate for it and avoid it, he still managed to do it.
Yeah. And remarkable, actually, thinking about all the things that Sale went through, that he did stay at Sale his entire career. He had a small stint at Bath, but outside of that, he was Sale through and through.
And the Bath was before.
Yeah.
That was a loan thing, wasn't it?
Yeah,
part of the Wigan v Bath. I'd love to. Is there a Wigan v Bath games? Are they on YouTube?
Oh, that's a good question.
Great shout!
Yeah,
I'll have a look at that for a future one.
I'd watch that maybe after the All Blacks if we can get hold of it.
The last couple of things that I'll say about this is it's awesome that we've covered one guy twice, which would be Christian Day, winning two Premiership titles on our humble podcast.
Mm.
It's also amazing to watch a young Wigglesworth play because he plays with such zip.
And yeah.
It's so interesting to see how his game has developed. Because no one thinks about him as a zippy scrum half from the base, but that's exactly what he was.
He was live wire in this game. He was brilliant and he stood out so much more than Harry Ellis in this game. I know Harry Ellis was a great player. I really, really like Harry Ellis for Leicester and England. But in this game, if you just watch this in total isolation, you said, who is the starting England nine? You'd say Wigglesworth comfortably.
Yeah. With Ben Foden backing him up, coming off the bench for 5 minutes at scrum half.
And do you know what? The thing about Ben Foden is, the reason he couldn't be a scrum half, in my opinion, is I just can't take him seriously. So he's at the he's at the back of the rucks and he's barking the orders. And I'm just like, that he doesn't have whatever the thing is which makes you hit a ruck, which Wigglesworth does or Harry Ellis does or all the great scrum halves. So you're like, the way that the tiny little Peter Stringer is demanding that you hit rucks. There's just something about Ben Foden which I don't think I could respond to in the same way I could Stringer.
Not the same authority.
Pass is missing somehow.
Can I just do a slight tangent away from this? Because you've just mentioned the Clash of the Codes. I've just found... Have a listen to this for the back line of Wigan Warriors for the Rugby League Clash of the Codes game against Bath Rugby Union side.
Can we try and name some of them?
Yeah, try and name them.
So, Radlinski.
Chris Radlinski was fullback.
Robinson.
Robinson, yes, was one of the wingers.
Connolly.
Gary Connolly was one of the centres.
Oh, Sean Long. Not Sean Long. Sean Edwards.
Sean Edwards was dummy half.
Oh,
Martin
O'Fire, yeah.
Martin O'Fire was the other winger, yeah.
Have we got them all?
You're missing another rugby union convert.
Andy Farrell?
No.
He would have been playing 13.
At halfback. Well, he might be in the forwards, but I only got the back line here.
Robbie Paul?
Henry Paul, close.
Henry
Nice.
And I think we've got another... we've got another rugby union convert in the centre. So let me get the team. So it was Sean Edwards, Henry Paul, Gary Connolly with Vaiga Tuigamala in the centres.
Yeah.
Martin Afire, Jason Robinson, Chris Radlinski. That is like an all-time great backline.
What a team that was as well.
And Andy Farrell was in the forwards, yeah.
What was the score? Because I can't imagine Bath did that well.
Wasn't it like 40 points to Bath when they played Union and 41 points to Wigan when they played League, something like that?
Yeah, no. but Bath let them off. They didn't bother pushing in the scrum. They kept it like uncontested scrums.
Okay.
Interesting.
But the Bath back line was... I know we're going off point. Oh, I'll just do it. John Callard at 9, Mike Catt at 10, Adedeo Adebayo, Fraser Waters and Phil de Glanville, John Slighthome and Audley Lumsden.
Fraser Waters. Yeah, it's not star-studded. I was about to say how much I liked Fraser Waters as a player then. But then I remember them comparing them to Morrison O'Fire and Inga Twigamalo and Sean Edwards.
And yeah. Jason Robinson and Andy Farrell. Oh.
Anyway, sorry. Took us off on tangent. I'll look for the Clash of the Codes videos. That'd be great to watch.
And I think it's also worth pointing out, isn't it? If you're one of those sort of union fans that says, oh, League's rubbish, don't like League, just look how much that Wigan team alone has contributed to the game of union.
Yeah.
two of the all-time great coaches as well, or certainly two great coaches in Edwards and Farrell.
What do you think this win meant for Sale? And conversely, the loss for Leicester?
So dealing with Leicester, they had lost the previous 2 years, so they lost 3 seasons on the bounce before winning it back the following season with a bit of a changed team. So for Leicester, it is a disappointing blip in the middle of their successful years. I think this would be looked at. For Sale, it's really interesting because it was talked about in comms on that day as being like a huge massive special event, putting rugby on the map in Manchester kind of thing. But then it just didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't. They never continued and built on that success in the way that other good clubs have done, the way that Leicester did, the way that Wasps in the mid-2000s did, the way that Saracens and Exeter have done over the last 10 years.
It highlights the difference between a great institution and a great team. The Sale team was a great team, but Leicester are a great institution. If they'd have won it, fine. If they hadn't won it, they'll be back. Bottom of the table, they will still be back because that's what institutions do. And in some ways, I kind of wish that Sale had gone and got to 2 or 3 finals rather than winning one, because then they don't hang on that final continually. I think after that, for a long, long time afterwards, they were like, yeah, we were content because we won it. And, you know, now we're done.
Well, in the immediate aftermath, I don't think that's kind of where Sale were at. So Brian Kennedy was the owner at the time, and he was basically talking about a new stadium.
Yep.
Or an expanded. He was talking about doing up Edgeley Park so it became a modern stadium. And he was talking about this is just the start. We're going to form a dynasty and all of the rest of it, which didn't materialise. But I think that's what happens to you if you go and get a coach like Philippe Saint-André. Yeah, he could win you a league, but don't plan on anything long term.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
You're exactly right. They bought in their talent, and the shame of it is they had enough talent coming through to sustain something. But when the interest ran out and the money was withdrawn, you know, it all left. Christian Day left. Even lads like Mayer left.
Chris Mayer, yeah.
Yeah.
I see him at Sale occasion. I'm sure it's him. He looks younger now than he did then.
of those two teams, there's only Wigglesworth who's still playing properly, isn't there? I mean, Ben Foden's playing in New York.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't think anyone is still playing.
Playing for Sale FC.
Who is, sorry?
Mayer is playing for Sale FC.
Sale FC, okay, yeah. Yeah, I'll put that. I'll put in the Ben Foden playing.
It's very generous of you.
Tom Vandell.
Where's he playing now?
He's at Leeds Carnegie.
Ah, of course.
Put that in the Foden category.
Yes.
I think the front row. All the packs were pretty old, weren't they? Oh, no, I've got one. Dean Schofield plays for Stockport.
Okay, in the Foden category.
Above the Foden category.
But it is interesting. I only know this Sale side kind of secondhand a couple of years after they'd won the league. All I know from the experiences I know secondhand hearing about Sale is there was a lot of big names who did not want to mix with any small names, and there were huge cliques. And this is a couple of years after they won the league. So there might be an element of what you're talking about, JB, that what kind of happened is there wasn't anyone, because Philippe Saint-André, then Kingsley Jones was one of the coaches who then took over. There wasn't anyone to kind of keep people together and keep it moving forward.
They had the talent. I mean, the talent carried on coming through. Neil Briggs was let go. Carl Ferns was let go. Ben Foden was let go. Christian Day was let go. Wigglesworth went. You know,
Foden went.
Big Loof.
Yeah, loads of them. So they could have sustained it. There was talk of overpaying, you know, for certain players who stayed there, and that's why the salary cap was all out of whack. But ultimately, it was out of whack because the owner lost interest. And I think when you look at the political games around rugby and how hot, that's the thing. It might be easy to win a title, but it's very hard to sustain it.
Yeah, yes. To win titles.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's only with the benefit of 14 years hindsight, Sale thought they were going to be doing what Leicester had done previously, but it both puts into perspective where Leicester are now, but also what Leicester achieved prior to 2006, just how amazing that was.
Yeah, you can look at another team who have not quite suffered the same way, but they've suffered, which is Northampton. They won one. You can win one. Try and get back there. Even Exeter, Quins.
Quins, the same. Yeah. Yeah, Exeter will be... That is a true test of Baxter and his team, is can they back it up?
Yeah. Do we mention Saracens in this, or do we just pretend Saracens never happened after? It's not worth the hassle.
Yeah, okay. Let's just ignore Saracens.
Let's ignore Saracens.
One last thing from me. So, three players from this game got into Sky Sports Premier Rugby Dream Team in 2005, 2006. Who were they?
Okay, the Dream Team, entire league.
Dream Team is the entire league. Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at the teams on paper now, and I'm guessing one of them would have been, because I remember he had an amazing season, Chris Jones.
No.
Really?
Oh, that's it. But you deserve a no for being so left field and hipster there. I'm going to say Robinson. Easy. An easy one.
No. Matt Burke was the fullback. Who was at Newcastle?
Alassana Tuolagi?
No. No Tuolagi.
Well, okay. Definitely Hodgson.
No Hodgson. The 10 was Carlos Spencer for Northampton.
What? Be good at Thompson.
This is Dewi Morris and Stuart Barnes picking this team, JB. You know it's class.
Dewi Morris is twice as big a Sale fan as Tim reports that I am.
Well, Jason White would have been one.
Nope.
Boston Chabal.
Nope.
It's outrageous.
So that one of them is legitimate based on this game. The other two, based on this game.
Magnus Lund.
They're ridiculous. Magnus Lund is correct. He's the only Sale player. Therefore, the other two are Leicester players.
Lewis Deacon.
Daryl Gibson.
No. It was, understandably, because he was top try scorer in the league, it was...
Varndell.
And the other one, superb player. Didn't have his best game in this, but Benke.
Yeah, I can see that. I thought Benke did actually have a quite good game. One hit in particular. Oh, my favourite hit was on Vesti, though.
Oh, yes.
The best thing about that is we've all been there in amateur rugby when the nine has no idea where he's going to pass it. And then a slow flat ball into the chest of... Who was it? Oh, yeah. The oncoming centre who's static gets absolutely smashed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you know what was unique at this point about Sale's win? They were the first team to win and...
Top the table.
Top correct. The league. Ah, that's interesting.
So true champions. The first true...
How many times has that been done? Because that's been was something that's been replicated quite a lot. There was Bath finished top and lost to Saracens.
Yep.
Exeter finished top and lost to Saracens. Saracens finished... Wasps finished top and lost to Exeter.
Oh, good. The answer is a lot. An awful lot.
Quins, I don't know about them. And I don't know about Northampton.
Northampton and Quins, yeah.
He definitely didn't.
Mm. So it might be a rarity, that this one.
Yeah.
It's also a rarity for a final played in the rain.
Yes. End of May.
I just had a thought of a classic game that we should watch, which people do not think are... Well, it's a classic in my... It's not a classic, but it's going to be...
6-3.
No, far better than that. You mentioned Varndell, the unique talent, the unique things that Tom Varndell brings to a game on occasions. And maybe one of the most Varndell-y type games, I'm sure he went on this tour as well, was the Tour to Australia, which was the tour from hell, involving Pete Richards at scrum half, Varndell on the wing, like all of the B-listers after the World Cup.
And so they 2008.
And they get absolutely spanked.
Was it South Africa or was it Australia?
I think it's Australia. But the amount of...
Is this the tour? No, this isn't the tour from hell.
Yeah, it is the tour from hell.
Is that... That's New Zealand, isn't it?
No, I'm sure it's Australia.
Sure. Oh, no, Tour from Hell, South Africa.
No, I seem to remember.
I can't remember now.
What's his name? He played for Leicester. He played on the wing, 14, convert league, dreadlocks everywhere. Amazing.
Oh, Vinicolo.
Vinicolo.
Gloucester. No.
Brilliant. Played for Leicester.
Lottie Tikiri.
Lottie Takiri. Lottie Takiri, I'm sure, runs over Varendell like he's not there. It is seared in my memory. Now, that might not be that. No, it is that. It is that.
The tour from hell is 98 to South Africa, the one that's dubbed the tour from hell, but that I don't think that's the one you're referring to.
It's people like Dan Hipkiss.
Oh, here we go. Australia 76, England 0.
When was that?
Please, can we watch that game?
This was 1998, 6th of June,
98. 98?
England's under Clive Woodward before the 99 World Cup. England suffered their heaviest defeat in Test match history.
But that can't include Tom Varendell in 1998. He would have been about 13.
I mean, there may have been another summer tour where Varendell was spanked, but this particular 98, 76-0 team, the England team was Tim Stimpson, Spencer Brown, Matt Perry at centre, Steve Ravenscroft, Austin Healy on the wing. It was Johnny Wilkinson at fly half, Scott Benton at scrum half.
Oh my word, these names.
Graham Rowntree, Richard Cockerell, Phil Vickery. So this is 5 years prior to a World Cup win. Danny Grewcock at second row with Gareth Archer. That is a meaty second row pairing, that. Ben Sternham at 6, Richard Paul-Jones at 7, and Tony Diprose at 8. 76-0. That team shouldn't have lost 76-0.
Well, I don't know. The back sound like they should have lost 76-0. The second row sound like they should have won 76-0.
Yeah, but I suppose we are mentioning those names and thinking about, oh, that's Phil Vickery, a World Cup winner, but this was 5 years prior.
Yeah. He must have been young then, because he was still playing in 2009 in the Lions.
Yeah, it's
Scott Benton.
Peter Richards was a scrum half. Have I made that up?
No, it is a different tour you're talking about. But yeah, I know, I remember the one you're talking about. They got hammered.
Yeah, it must be. I'll have to find it. It's great because they do get hammered as well, like badly, badly hammered. It sinks a lot of international careers, including Richards, until he is the understudy for... I mean, I can't believe he was a England scrum half, but he was.
He's a World Cup winning England scrum half, wasn't he? Or is it the 2007 World Cup he went as on the bench?
Went on the bench. Got starts.
So,
there you go. We should definitely do a tour from hell, because they do sound hilarious.
It would be quite fun to do that.
That would be fun to do a tour from hell. Oh, Australia 43, England 18, June 2006. So this was straight after this final.
Read the team.
So see,
I'm looking at one from 2008, which was to New Zealand, in which Varendell did play.
Did Varendell play in that one, Tim?
Yeah, the England team was Bolshaw, Varendell, Noon, Cat, Tate, Goode, Richards. Forwards are Rowntree, Shooter, White, Jones, Kay, Worsley, Lipman, Sanderson.
Yeah, legitimately bad. I mean, they had it coming. And did Lottie Takiri play?
Yes.
Yes, that is the game.
That's it. 43-18, June 2006.
And at the time, England slumped to their fifth consecutive defeat. Do you remember the post-World Cup era when Martin Corrie was desperately trying to cajole an awful England team, and they were getting, I think they didn't win in ages, and they lost to Argentina at Twickenham? Horrendous period that was.
I remember that. I feel like I would do as well. I feel like I'd have enjoyed that too.
I'm sure you would. Good. I enjoyed looking back at this game as well. What sort of, on a big picture, what did you sort of take away from the difference 14 years to now in terms of the game?
It wasn't that much different.
No,
not all right.
There's some dodgy handling. I'll put it down to the rain, and like I said before, Leicester team didn't get their backs firing at all.
I felt Sale looked like a modern rugby team.
Sale played a very smart game plan and executed it really, really well. Hodgson in particular. Hodgson and Wigglesworth were superb. Absolutely brilliant. Interesting to see. I think we have made this point before, but at this period in time, the difference between those people who took strength and conditioning seriously and those people who did not take strength and conditioning seriously, there was massive, massive discrepancy between some of them. I mean, some of the guys out there are absolutely stacked in really, really good nick, really good condition.
And there's
a few others.
Yeah. And then there's some others.
Right, so we are going to be focusing our attention on the All or Nothing New Zealand documentary, and that will be fun to hear our thoughts on that next week. Just on that Australia-England game, which I'm bang up for doing that another time if we can find a video, because another reason, the referee is Steve Walsh.
Yes. But it was his first stint when he wasn't a New Zealander.
He's down as, in brackets, New Zealand.
Yeah, so he was New Zealand originally, wasn't he?
Then he
converted to an Australian referee.
What was his tattoo again?
He was a dumb game.
Yes.
Love it. Right, so we'll see if we can dig that one out. But next week it'll be New Zealand, of course. We have got another podcast in the feed already. If you haven't heard it, make sure you hit subscribe. He's at Jay Beardmore on Twitter. And you're getting a bit more stuck into Twitter at the minute, JB, I notice.
Yeah, really getting into it now.
Yeah.
getting in the cesspit.
I'm stepping right back, but I am at Cocker nonetheless. And Phil, well, he'll let you know if he wants to be found. He is lurking as ever. Thank you for listening. Hit subscribe and we'll see you on the next one.
All right.
Bye.
Sweet. Right, I'll get all that knocked up and nice one. Sorry about the mix-up or the technological thing earlier, but that was all good in the end.
Yeah, that's all good.
Cool, sweet. I'm off. See you later.
Nice one.
Guys. Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.